and this is KPCW. You're listening to the Local News Hour. Let's find out what we got coming up in store for our weather on this Halloween. Here with a report is Cedric Haynes of the ABC4 Weather Center.
Happy Halloween, KPCW listeners. It's time for the Wasatch Back Forecast for your Friday. We're looking at lots of sunshine out there. Temperatures not starting out as cool this morning thanks to a couple of passing clouds that are moving through the state. Otherwise, as we go throughout the afternoon, we're going to be seeing more in the way of sunshine. So we'll call it partly sunny to mostly sunny throughout the day. Temperatures will climb into the mid to upper 50s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 60s for us in the Heber Valley. As we move into your rest of your holiday weekend, your Saturday, we'll start off with temperatures right around the freezing mark once again in both Park City and the Heber Valley. We'll look at those high temperatures climbing into the low 60s there for us in Park City, with highs climbing into the mid 60s in the Heber Valley. Your Sunday will feature sunshine and temperatures starting off in the 30s, with high temperatures climbing into the mid 60s in Park City and highs climbing into the upper 60s, closing in on 70 on your Sunday afternoon in the Heber Valley. As we go into next week, we're going to be seeing more sunshine as high pressure continues to remain the dominant feature across the region. That's going to mean a lot of sunshine out there to kick off the week, with temperatures starting off in the 30s. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 60s once again for Park City, and we'll see those highs in the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. We'll start to work in some slightly cooler areas as we get into your Tuesday. High temperatures will only be around 60 in Park City, with highs in the mid-60s in the Heber Valley, but we'll still have plenty of sunshine. As we go into your Wednesday, we'll see those temperatures remaining in the low 60s for highs in Park City and mid-60s for highs in the Heber Valley after starting off in the 30s during the morning time hours. Now, by Wednesday night and a Thursday, we may have a cold front that may try to graze, especially northern portions of the Beehive State, and that could help maybe spark off a couple of scattered showers across the area as we get into your Thursday. Now, we'll keep an eye on things there. It doesn't look like it's going to have a ton of moisture right now, but we could see some rain showers in the valleys, maybe some mountain snow showers, especially by Thursday night. We'll keep you posted. As we get your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, I will be speaking with Colleen McGinn about some of the ghosts that haunt Park City this time of year. Then Park City Miners football coach Josh Monsingo will stop by with a preview of this afternoon's playoff game. We're going to finish our hour by speaking with Park City Municipal Special Events Manager Chris Finney about what's going on this Halloween. There are many stories about what life was like in the spirit of mining town that was Park City. Some of those stories involve a different kind of spirit. Here to share some of Park City's ghost story on this Halloween and try to scare us this morning, we have Colleen McGinn. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Park City.
Okay, Colleen, how and when did you first become interested in the ghosts of Park City?
Well, I've lived in Old Town the entire time I've lived in Park City, so I've always been interested in it. And in 2013, I became a ghost tour guide for the Park City Ghost Tours.
And tell us a little more about, like, what intrigued you? What drew you into this thing?
Well, we live in a mining town, and so, of course, there are stories from the past, and I'm always interested in learning everything and anything about Park City, and so I think it probably started with the Park City Museum. If you haven't been there, one, what have you been doing? And two, it's fantastic, and so just learning about the history and the characters, like, I know that you and I are occupying it right now, but there's so many people who were here before us that, like, helped shape Park City and why it is the way it is today.
And, of course, the history of Park City, the vibrance of this is a mining town, does sort of intertwine with some of these ghost stories, doesn't it?
Of course.
Okay, so tell us, let's talk about some of your favorites.
So I live up on Daly. I've lived there for 15 years, so Daly's ghost stories are my favorite. So first, I should get into the type of ghosts. First, there's, you know, obviously Casper, the one that shows up and is like, what's up? But there's actual specific ghosts.
Casper is not a Park City ghost.
No. Casper's not.
He's a Hollywood ghost.
But just the ones that show up, mm-hmm. you know. But there's a ghost called a residual ghost, and a residual ghost plays everything up to their death on repeat for eternity. Mm-hmm. So if you've had one of those unfortunate deaths here in Park City, that doesn't seem very lovely, you know, to live like that. So I wasn't going to do that one. I wanted to do more of a uplifting one. So another type of ghost is called a crisis apparition. And a crisis apparition is a ghost that appears before you before something bad's about to happen. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to die, but it means to get the heck out of wherever you are. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's this really old movie. I don't know if you've heard of it before. It's called Snow White and the Seven Doors. Have you heard of it?
I have.
Oh, you have? Oh, good.
Yeah, you can call me dopey and you can call me grumpy, but I have at least heard of the Snow White and the Seven Doors.
Okay, good. So you know how in Snow White and the Seven Doors, the dwarves, the miners, they whistle their way to work?
Yeah.
Completely false. Miners were very superstitious, and they felt by whistling their way to work or whistling in the mines, it would drive away the good spirits. And so in the mines, it was very quiet, very somber.
Given how dangerous a profession that was, I guess it's not surprising that it was pretty somber.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The miners were also very superstitious about their last day of work. So if they announced to everyone that their last day of work was on a Friday, if they got out of the mine safely on, say, a Thursday, they would just call it right there and then and be like, all right, I'm done. Or if they had never announced when their last day of work was and they got out of the mine safely on, say, a Tuesday, they would just call it right there and then. So when we were putting these ghost tours together, we actually interviewed a couple miners because they were still hanging around from the mining days. And we asked them the big question, were there ghosts in the mines? And they were all in agreement. No. There weren't ghosts, plural, in the mine. There's one ghost, and it's Park City's most famous ghost, the man in the yellow slicker. Do you know what a yellow slicker is?
Is it like that thing Christopher Robin wears? You know,
I usually use the comparison to, if you've seen I Know What You Did Last Summer, the first one, same idea, mm-hmm. No hook, but it's like a raincoat, because mm-hmm. In the mines it was very damp, so they would wear these raincoats. So anyways, there was a newcomer to town, and he worked at the Daily Mines. And what was unique about the Daily Mines is that there was a competing mining company with an interconnecting tunnel. And so this newcomer to town, he thought he would be clever in the middle of the night when everyone left to sneak on over to the competing mining company and steal all of their equipment. And then he would bring it back to where he worked, and he would sell it to all of his friends for a really good price. And his friends were like, man, this guy's so cool. Nah, karma caught up with him. So they ended up finding this gentleman in one of the mining tunnels with his skull completely smashed in. But the thing was, is that there wasn't a bloody rock, you know, next to his body, and there wasn't a cave-in, and it wasn't like the Park City Police Department could come in and do an investigation because it's too dangerous to go in the mines. Even today, that's why they close them all off. However, after this gentleman's death, his friend said that they kept seeing him in that darn yellow slicker before something bad would happen. So if there was errant machinery, man in the yellow slicker. Or if there was a cave-in, man in the yellow slicker. So fast forward to today, there's an officer with the Park City Police Department, Officer Marty, who one night was dispatched up to the Daily Mines.
Even now?
This is recently.
Yeah.
And I have some friends in the Park City Police Department, and I confirmed this is true.
Okay.
And so, anyways, he got dispatched up there, and he goes up there and gets out of his patrol car, and he's looking around, and he doesn't see anything. And he's like, this is weird, like, I'm getting out of here. But he felt like someone or something was watching him. So he gets back into his patrol car. He turns on the ignition. He looks in the rear view mirror, and guess what he sees? A yellow figure. And he was like, oh no. So he puts the pedal to the metal, and he is cruising down that dirt road. The entire time he's cruising down that dirt road, the yellow figure is on him. As soon as he crossed over onto the pavement, the yellow figure was gone. To this day, Officer Marty will not go up into the Daily Mines. So on July 15th, 1902, the worst mining disaster in Utah history happened up in the Daly Mines, where 34 men lost their lives because there was dynamite just chilling in the mining tunnels. It prompted the Utah legislation to make a law that you can't do that because it's stupid.
But just, well, they were storing dynamite in the tunnel?
Yeah, but just like...
Sitting around just open.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not like, no safety protocols, yeah. Nothing.
It was 1902.
Yeah. And pre-OSHA. You're familiar with the montage, of course. So when the montage was excavating the land, they found dynamite just chilling in the hillside. Do you not remember this? You don't remember this?
I do not remember this.
So they had to call, you know, shut it down, call the bomb squad. Don't worry, montage is obviously doing very well. But someone didn't get the memo. So that explosion was on July 15th, 1902.
How bad, you say it was the worst mining disaster. How many people died?
34.
34 died, wow.
Yep. So that was July 15th. Mm-hmm. On July 14th, 1902, Richard Dill told his family and friends that he saw the man in the yellow sicker in the mines that day. And his friends were like, Richard, you're crazy. You'll be fine. You can go to work. Richard Dill was one of the 34 men that lost his life.
Okay, that's a real ghost story.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it's a ghost story. And like I mentioned at the beginning, I live on Daly. And so...
Have you seen the man in the yellow jacket? Or yellow slicker?
The yellow slicker, Roger.
Yes. Sorry.
We don't want to disrespect our ghost here.
Okay.
No, I've never seen the man in the yellow slicker. But just living up on Daly, I've experienced paranormal activity all the time where I live. Because the mines... Okay, this is going to blow your mind. Underneath us right now... There is 1,200 miles of mining tunnel. That is insane. They went all up these hills down to the core. It's actually sad because they gutted these mountains. And so just so much happened down below us, mm-hmm. you know? So even though the Daly Mines are up, you know, kind of isolated.
Where is that Daly Mine entrance that you were talking about where the police officer went?
So if you go up Main Street,
right.
It turns into Daly Avenue, the street that I've lived on for 15 years.
Right.
It eventually turns into a dirt road.
Okay.
Follow that dirt road, you'll see stairs that lead to nowhere. That used to be the old water tower.
Mm-hmm.
And just past the stairs that lead to nowhere is what's left of the Daly Mines.
Okay.
And there's a parking lot at the bottom to get to the mine or like the buildings, what's left over, 30 minutes tops.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you haven't done it, it's part of history. You
mm-hmm.
got to check it out. And like I mentioned, Park City Museum, they just do such a great job of putting plaques everywhere. Also, if you've ever noticed the ribbons on the homes, they give those out every year to the homes that have been here since the mining days, which means that like their frame has been there. Like the core, because
mm-hmm.
obviously most of them have been renovated, but it's kind of like a badge of honor for them to wear that.
Okay, so anything else on the man in the yellow slicker, or can we turn to yet another of your favorite ghosts?
yeah, we can turn to another one. I would say the Imperial Hotel. Do you know where that is?
Is that
up at the top of Main Street?
Is that where the Rustler was, or is that where the Uptown Fair used to be?
So I'm glad you mentioned Uptown Fair. Carlene's Uptown Fair, rest in peace, Carlene. So Carlene was actually on the bottom level of the Star Hotel.
Okay.
Imperial is right next
door.
It.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So this this story takes place in the 1980s, and Jeff had just purchased the Imperial Hotel,
mm-hmm.
and boy was he excited because I mean. Have you guys seen the Imperial Hotel? It's so cute. And it was, you know, prime real estate right at the top. And, you know, back in the 80s, you could get a piece of property on Main Street and not have to spend $1 million. And so he was very excited. And he bought it in the springtime, which was, like, perfect time for spring cleaning. When all of a sudden, all of the doors on every level were locked. Which wasn't super weird because these were guest homes, so they locked from the inside. But it was weird that all of them were locked all of a sudden. But that's what happens when people experience paranormal activity. They're like, that was weird, but I'm going to pretend like that didn't happen, right? Maybe you've experienced something like that, Roger, where something was weird and then you suppressed it and you're like, I'm gonna forget that. Just kidding. So anyways, same deal with Jeff. He was like, that was weird, but I'm gonna continue cleaning. So he goes door by door, floor by floor, unlocks all the doors, and guess what happens a couple hours later?
They're locked again.
You're good. Okay. Yeah, they're all locked. So
And then they weren't Wi-Fi locks that he was locking.
This is the 80s. So fast forward to the summertime. What I think most people know about Old Town, a lot of these old buildings don't have air condition, which I know that's the real horror, right? No air condition. But particularly as older buildings, like in the attic area, it gets very muggy in the summertime. So anyways, Jeff is up in the attic. If you're walking on Main Street and you look up at the Imperial Hotel, you'll see two window panes at the very top. That's room number 8. And so he's in room number 8, and all of a sudden, the room got really cold. And in a very soft voice, he hears, "Hello, sweetie," and a kiss on the back of his neck. He turned around and no one was there, but you can bet Jeff was halfway down Main Street, like, oh no, don't want to deal with that. But he paid a lot of money for it, so he had to figure it out. He didn't have to go very far. From Carlene's Uptown Fair. Obviously, they were buds. And for those who don't remember Carlene's Uptown Fair, hands down, one of the best lunch places in town. She would make a turkey every day.
Unbelievable.
The tomato soup, chocolate cake, like the most perfect lunch you've ever had.
And of course, during Sundance, she would refuse to serve anyone who wasn't a local. It was fabulous.
She was an incredible woman. Anyway, so Carlene told Jeff the story of Lizzie. Now, Lizzie lived in room number 8 during the mining days. And she was, how do I say this, Roger?
Affectionate?
Yes, Fallen Dove. Do you know Fallen Dove?
Fallen Dove.
Wait, okay, we'll go with Fallen Dove.
While we're talking about that, on Monday's Mountain Money, we're going to be doing a story about Deadwood. But we have a book on Deadwood where we talk about Fallen Doves. But anyway, go ahead.
Really? You know what happened here happened 6 years later in Deadwood.
Yes.
And George Hurst, who paid $27,000 for his mine here, ended up making $50 million. And then he was also involved in Deadwood, too. So George Hurst was doing very well. Anyways, back to Lizzie. So, So Lizzie was Fallen Dove, Lady of the Night of Park City. And I just gotta say, the mining days were tough. You know, girls gotta do what a girl's gotta do. This is one of my extracurricular activities, being a ghost tour guide. I'm not a Fallen Dove, but I get it. But the complication with that is that her husband had no idea. And so Lizzie's husband worked in the mines, and he would go to the weekly poker tournament at the Davich Bar. The Davich Bar is Red Banjo, mm-hmm. which is the oldest business on Main Street as far as like that building. And just a little theme of the mining days, I'll be frank, the mining days sucked. Like, it was really hard. Winters were tough. Disease was rampant. So for these miners to find joy in a weekly poker tournament, we're okay with that. So anyways, he was walking down Main Street, got about halfway down, and he was like, oh, forgot my lucky coin. So he goes back up, goes to the Imperial, up to room number 8. Mm-hmm. And he hears these really weird noises coming from his wife's room. So he's like, oh, I better grab the shotgun just in case. So he goes into the room, and he finds his wife with another man, so shoots and kills him. And then he is, like, right in front of his wife, aiming the gun at her stomach, and he shoots her. Lizzie, and I'm so sorry for this, listeners, Lizzie ended up splitting in half. When she appears to people, she appears in the room number 8 window from the waist up. She particularly likes to appear to men with beards because they got that old miner look that she likes. But we respect Lizzie so much. And last thing I like to share with Lizzie, and it ties back to Carlene. So Carlene told me a couple other stories about Lizzie just from working next door. And if you remember with Carlene's Uptown Fair, it was like Alice in Wonderland in there because the furniture
low ceilings,
yeah. Big furniture. And so she had this rabbit hole that she would store things in, like in the earth, that would keep it cool. And she said that when she would put things in there, she could hear classical music playing upstairs. But the thing is, at that point, the Star Hotel was condemned. Mm-hmm. And so they got rid of all of the furniture, all of the appliances. I was able to acquire a toaster, which I refer to as my ghoster. Roger, you didn't like that joke?
I did like
my
that
ghoster?
Joke. I did like that joke.
But anyways, I feel like Lizzie is at the top of Main Street. She's running that place. And whenever you pass by, make sure you show your respects to Lizzie.
Okay, Colleen, before we go, I want to talk a little bit. Are you still doing ghost tours?
Yes, of course. I'm okay. Back. So I retired for many years because the ghosts liked me too much. I know that sounds silly, but ghosts, particularly... You know, I'm telling their story every week. I'm continuing their legacy. They think I'm cool. And so they like to make their presence known. And it just got to be too much. And so I retired. And as soon as I retired, all the weird things in my apartment stopped. And you're probably wondering why I came back. So they needed help. And so the Park City Ghost Tours, they go out every night. In the summer and fall, they go out at 8. And then starting tomorrow, actually, November, they switch to 7. But they go all along Main Street, checking out...
all these sites we've been talking
all
about.
All the sites, yeah. A little bit over an hour. And Eric, who's the owner, he's fantastic. He's researched all these stories. And all of these stories connect back to the oldest business in town, still in circulation today, the Park Record.
Park Record, yep. All right, Colleen McGinn, thanks for spending time with us on this spooky Halloween.
Thank you.
The Utah Trail Network Visionary Trail Map, available at kpcw.org, shows an ambitious network of trails for pedestrians and cyclists.
Think of this as like the interstate system of paved trails.
That's UDOT Trails Division Director Stephanie Tomlin.
So we now have the guiding star, you know, the North Star, so to speak, of where UDOT will be going as we move this program along.
The map released Tuesday is not a binding document, but it outlines 3,100 miles of trails connecting 208 cities and towns, 33 colleges, and at least 74 transit stations. 9 in 10 Utahns would live within a mile of the trail network. Locally, UDOT has its eye on trails in Parleys and Provo Canyons, extending into Park City, Heber, Midway, Camas, and Oakley.
It really is about creating commuting options for people. Of course, we know these types of trails are great from a recreation standpoint, but we're the Department of Transportation. We're really trying to help people choose active transportation as a mode.
Another line on the map overlaps with the historic Union Pacific Rail Trail, which is paved within Park City limits but gravel the rest of the way to Colville. Summit County, which is in talks to take over trail management responsibilities from Utah State Parks, has polled residents on paving it and found them split. According to the county's rail trail corridor plan, the path is often used by horseback riders. It emphasizes the rail trail as a recreational asset, but also says residents want a better maintained trail, which pavement could deliver. From Tomlin's perspective, UDOT doesn't do anything without a feasibility study, which means gathering public input.
Yeah, a feasibility study is really an important part of the process to understand where the paved trail makes the most sense.
Based on that, the trail map is subject to change. UDOT is actively studying the section of the rail trail between State Route 248 and Interstate 80. More information at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Today's not only Halloween, it's the day when the Park City High School Miners football team starts its playoff journey. Here with a preview is Coach Josh Monsignor. Morning, Josh.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Josh, let's start with the basics first. When and where is today's game?
We got it at home, and we're playing at 4 o'clock p.m., so we get a little mid-afternoon fun, and we're playing Skyview.
And you'll have time to go trick-or-treating afterwards, I
suppose. That's right. Everybody gets to fit everything in.
And I will remind our listeners at the end of the interview that we will be broadcasting that game live, Fantastic. As we always do. Josh, let's talk a little bit about how the team has evolved over the season.
Sure. It's been a fun year. It's been a tough year. We've had a loaded schedule. We talked about that earlier, you know, kind of going into the season, and we knew it was going to be a big challenge playing a lot of big teams, a lot of talented teams, really well-coached teams. And, you know, we didn't quite win them all. There's a couple we really would like to have back, honestly. We've been a defensive-heavy team. Our defense has been dominant this year. Replacing the D-line, there was maybe a question mark in my mind going in, and holy cow, they answered that one, and then some. And we're just loaded at linebacker and in our secondary, and you put that together, and they're a force.
You know, it's interesting, Josh, because teams do have identities. Yeah. And this team, from what I understand, really has been defensive-oriented.
Absolutely.
The whole season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they don't give up much. They're stingy.
10, 12 points a game. And what's your average?
Sounds about right, to be honest with you. I think we're like number 3 in the state in scoring defense. And take nothing away, I think they're the best defense in the state. They're amazing what they do. And they're out there, you know, probably too much at times. And they answer the bell and they answer the call when needed.
Now, how old are they? I mean, in other words, how senior is that line?
The line has probably got a good amount of seniors on it. And they're the guys that hadn't necessarily started. So that was why the question mark going in. But, you know, the talent was there. And they've just slotted right in. And we thought, you know, replacing last year's group was going to be tough, which it normally is. But they've just fit right in.
You know, I always like to ask you this question. Are any of those kids getting significant looks from D1 or D2 or D3 schools?
Yeah. Our defense does have quite a few. We have a couple kids who are committed. Our safety's committed to Johns Hopkins. Great place for him. He's going to be amazing. We've got two linebackers that are still kind of there undecided where they're going to go. A lot of Division I opportunities. The Ivies are involved for one of them quite a bit. So big opportunities there for them. And then a few other guys who are absolutely going to be on D2, D3 radars. Another safety's got a D2 offer here and there and a few other offers as well.
I really like the notion that we've got Park City students looking at Ivies and Johns Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
So academics and football.
Cool. Academics, you know, we're very blessed. We have a lot of great students, and those open a lot of doors.
Now, you know, we've been talking about the defense, but when I looked at the sort of results from that last playoff game, both Josh Hofer and Eli Warner really put on a show.
Yeah.
Was that a breakthrough game for them?
A little bit. I mean, Eli's been coming on. He's a known quantity. He's the game plan guy everybody's trying to stop every week, which early in there was difficult, and he obviously was frustrated by that. But we found ways to move him to get him the ball because he's such a weapon. And, you know, Hofer's really kind of settled in. He's taken over the reins as we lost our other one to a season-ending injury, unfortunately. And Josh has stepped up, and it's kind of been a back and forth with those two anyway all year. We've been a little bit of a two-quarterback system. And unfortunately, with Cole going down, Josh answered the bell, and he's really kind of just kind of blossomed and found his little niche.
Now, how big a factor was obviously, when you light it up like they did, I looked at the stats. They were really impressive. I don't know if you remember them off the top of your head. How many yards did they get?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm not a huge stat guy. Did we win the game? What I want.
And how big a factor was offensive line play in facilitating that attack?
Yeah, it always starts up front, offense and defense. Our O-line did a great job. You know, they actually were against while their record doesn't say they're great, Uinta, holy cow, they've got some big, strong farm boys. They just work hard, and they get after it, and they're aggressive. And they gave us everything we could handle up front. And we took it at first, and then we adjusted and adapted, and those guys just kind of kept wearing them down and coming after them. They didn't care if they were going to be bigger or stronger or not, and said, hey, we're going to run the ball. We're going to come right at you. And it's what we did, which the last few games we started to really do. It's always been our identities running and just being the extra physical team, and we need to get back to that.
Now, I talked to Pete Gilwald this morning and asked him about what he thought, and one of the things he said was you're getting, you know, the nice thing about a bye is you get some time to get people to get better. Who's coming back?
I don't know if we got a whole lot coming back. We had a couple of guys that were dinged up in that last game that just got healthier that would have either played a little more dinged up than we would have liked. We did lose our running back in the last one, and he is going to be able to come back thanks to that.
Yeah, who is that? That was what...
That's Onor Sorio.
That's what Pete was referring to.
He's able to come back thanks to that. We probably wouldn't have had him last week, unfortunately, with the protocol there that he was in, so...
Okay. How much... Again, to go back to where we started, it's been you mentioned that the opponent is Skyview. Where is that school?
It's up north.
Okay.
Yeah, almost up to Idaho up there. It's a long ways up.
I believe it's been a long time since the Miners have lined up against Skyview.
It's been a while. That's the team that unfortunately got us in the championship game a few years ago. The year before that, we got them in the quarterfinals to shock the world and get ourselves to the semis for the first time since I've been here. We definitely got some history with that school a little bit. Different coach now. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I'm sure they're going to be absolutely ready. They're super well coached. They've got a lot of great athletes.
What's their identity? Well, we talked about your identity as a defensive
team. They're an offensive team, 100%.
Right. So it's strength against strength.
Yeah, that 100% is correct. Yeah. No, they like to throw it around. They will run the ball, and they want to go fast, and they just want to score as many points as they can.
Are they one of these teams? Are we going to see, like, hurry-up offenses and things like that?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're going to try to get as many possessions as they can. They're also going to try to get as many snaps as they can get, try to wear you out. They're going to try to speed that tempo up as much as they can, so we'll counter that, and we'll slow it down on the other side of the ball.
And, I take it, how do you prepare for a game like this, both you and how do you prepare the team?
Well, the good thing is the defense has seen up-tempo teams before, so they're used to that. And at times, if we really feel a team's going crazy fast, Timpanogos in the past has been one of those teams. We'll sometimes bring out two huddles and send one at them and send the next one at them right after, so they have to get lined up right away. They kind of simulate the game. You can't do that, all day long and just wear them into the ground, but they'll get, 5-10 minutes of that, so they know, okay, we got to get lined up, we got to get ready, we got to be prepared, got to get focused again, even though I just want to play. So we do prepare them for that, but also playing teams like them in the past, I think, will give them something to draw upon that, hey, we know what this feels like. We know how to do this. We know how to operate. It's just part of the game now. Nowadays, people like to go fast at times.
Have you been up against teams that did that this year where we're seeing like no huddles or really quick?
Yeah, most teams are no huddle. It's just not everybody's no huddle to go fast.
Right.
Timpanogos did like to go a little bit faster. They're probably one of the teams that tried to go the fastest. A lot of the other teams were spread and no huddle, but it wasn't necessarily to go quickly.
And again, if on the game today, I expect to see a sort of a contrast in styles. You're not a go quick team, are you?
No, we're definitely not. Now, when we feel like there's a time to turn it up, we do. And if something's working, I'm going to just keep rolling it out there and going as quickly as he can at times. But at the same time, no, we want to get them lined up quickly. We want to make the defense line up quickly, but we want to see where they're at. We want to make sure that we're in the right position to get the right play at more times than not. So, yeah, we're no huddle and whatnot, but we're not necessarily setting the world on fire with our speed and tempo.
So it's 2 weeks from now. We're doing another interview, and you're going to say to me the key to the game and the reason we won was...
It's because we took care of the ball. We did the little things right. The team it's playoffs, and you're going to have two good teams. They're evenly matched. The team that doesn't make the mistakes, that doesn't turn the ball over. The team that makes the plays when they're called upon. They make the big catch. They make the big tackle. They make the big block. You name it, whatever it is, there are going to be moments. There's probably four or five every game, and if we were the team that made those because we're more prepared and we had great practices for 2 weeks and we're healthy, that'll be our edge to win this game.
Did they have a bye last week, or did they play?
No, they didn't. They played last week.
Do you think that's an advantage?
Sometimes you think it is, and it can be, because you keep your rhythm going and you keep going. At the same time, just because you're getting healthier, it depends on how you handle that bye week. We're used to having a bye week, so I think the good thing is our kids understand it's still work time. It's not goof around time, and it's important preparation.
Yeah, talking about preparation, what do you do differently when you have a two-week gap, what do you do differently than a regular one-week gap during the season?
We look at ourselves and over the season, and what did we do really well? What didn't we do well? What would we like to work on? And we kind of go back to camp, so to speak, and we can take time to slow down and work on those deficiencies, those things that we want to get better at, those things that maybe we wanted to add in, and we feel are an advantage going forward, but we didn't have the time every week because you just don't have a lot each week. That's the advantage of having that time. Not to mention, you don't have to be as physical with yourselves. You can be a little more mental. So the preparation mentally and getting yourself caught up to speed and or giving yourself a little edge with adding a couple of things in that you didn't have time for. That's your big advantage.
So with that rhythm, do you tend to give them less physical stuff during that first week?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. We try to keep it up tempo and fun and fast so that it doesn't feel like we're just sleepwalking and nobody's paying attention. But at the same time, we don't want to beat ourselves into oblivion. I did that the first time and that was a mistake. Like, okay, we can't go super crazy physical on that. We want to have everybody healthy and ready as much as we can. Things happen, but... be careful.
Now, you mentioned that they're relatively equally matched. I think, did they seed the teams in this tournament?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, we're number 8 and they're number 9.
So we're literally
about as close as it gets there. So we're very evenly matched. A lot of talent on both sides of the ball. I think both teams are really well coached. We've played each other before, and no one's going to overlook the other one. It's going to be a fun matchup.
So it is trick or treat day. I'm looking back at this. Am I going to be able to ask you about a trick play?
You might. You just never know. We're not the master of trick plays this year, to be honest with you. We did a lot more last year than we have this year, but you just never know what will happen.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we go?
No, go Miners.
Go Miners. The game will be broadcast here on KPCW at 4 o'clock. Josh, thanks for spending time with us, and good luck. Go Miners.
Thanks for having me.
Nearly 200 nonprofits from all over Park City and Summit County are participating in the 15th annual Live PC, Give PC. Christine Coleman of the Park City Community Foundation says the annual fundraiser is meant to help ensure everyone in the Wasatch Back can thrive.
The nonprofits really, really ensure that our community is vibrant and thriving. It helps the locals, the workforce, kids, seniors, definitely newcomers, part-timers, visitors all benefit from the many programs that nonprofits provide to us.
Organizations participating in Live PC, Give PC represent a wide spectrum of causes. On the fundraising dashboard, donors can search based on interests like education or recreation.
For example, if you're concerned about affordable housing here in our area, you can search on housing and all the organizations that focus on housing will come up. If you love horses, search on horses.
Giving is open now through next Friday, November 7th. At midnight, the Community Foundation reveals the fundraising total. Last year, nonprofits raised over $5 million. Coleman says people shouldn't shy away from giving just a few dollars. Matching gifts and power hours help those smaller gifts go farther. Vail Resort's Epic Promise Foundation is supporting this year's power hours.
Especially at this moment in time where there are many programs that are being hard hit by the loss of federal funds and dealing with financial uncertainty. So this is a very important time to support the nonprofits that provide so many services for us.
The foundation is aiming for 7,150 individual donors and at least 5.15 million in donations. As in years past, there will be community celebrations around town. From 4 to 6 p.m., the Park City Library will have live music, free refreshments, and games for all ages to enjoy. For those over 21, the party continues at High West Saloon and the O'Shucks White House from 8 p.m. until midnight. The Park City Community Foundation is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, there are certain things that sort of annual events that sort of really define Park City. Think Miner's Day. Think the first night of Arts Fest. But my favorite is probably Halloween. Here with the details on this year's annual celebration is Chris Finney, Park City Special Events Manager. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about what is the Halloween event?
Halloween on Main is a great community event, as you mentioned. We shut down Main Street for a pedestrian-only event. So the whole Main Street will be shut down from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. The event starts around 3 and ends around 6. All the Main Street shops will be passing out candy. People can go door-to-door, trick-or-treat. Everyone's dressed up. Like you said, it's one of my favorite days in town as well. You see anything from an infant dressed up, all the dogs are dressed up, anyone from moms, dads, grandparents, everyone's out there having a good time.
And there are lots of dogs.
There are a good amount of dogs, yeah.
Now, Chris, I'm not blindsiding you. Were you able to find out anything about what the history of this event is? How long has it been going on?
As long as I can remember. You know, I've been in town since 95, and I remember a Halloween event on Main Street for as long as I can remember. I don't know the history exactly when it started.
Now, Chris, what do you have to do, and you and the city have to do, to get ready for this?
So my team's out there right now pre-placing a lot of barricades. So we'll be shutting the street down, like I said. So we notice everyone on the street that we'll be shutting the street down at 2 with we call it kind of a soft closure. So then we'll be working with the police department who will be trying to find any cars that are parked on Main Street and having them move.
The cars are all off the street?
Correct, yeah, okay. By 2 p.m. And then we'll be putting some barricades on all of the intersections so that barricades and hard barriers, so vehicles, things like that, that will block anyone from driving on the street, making it safe for anyone to walk up and down the street. So we work with the police department. Transit will be upping their game as well. We'll have extended routes and buses running to and from the transit center to Richardson Flat and some of the external parking areas, getting everyone into town as quickly as we can. We'll be having a bus lane as well. We'll be setting up a bus lane on Deer Valley Drive. So that will help anyone on transit. It may slow down a little bit if you're driving in a town, so give yourself a little extra time knowing that Deer Valley Drive will be down to one lane for traffic and one lane for buses. So if you're on buses, you'll be able to zip right into town.
Yeah, let's make sure we do cover the transit more thoroughly. Richardson Flat, will they be running a little more frequently? And how when will they start running frequently and when will they end?
Yep, so the extended frequencies will be every 10 minutes from Richardson Flat from 2:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. tonight.
Okay, and I take it that today, as always, dogs are allowed on those buses.
That's right. So, you know, the dogs are allowed on Halloween, but the policy has actually changed. So any day that you want to bring your dog around, it's a good time to get on transit. You can bring them on as well.
And if you insist on driving and parking, will the China Bridge lot be available?
Yep, China Bridge will be available. It's a $15 flat fee, so you can come in and park. That starts at 2 p.m. You can park, pay your $15, and then you're good for the entire event and the entire evening, actually.
Chris, I don't know if you know this. Can you also park at the high school after 3?
You can park at the high school after 3, but I will note that tonight is a
playoff game.
For the football, so it should be pretty busy over there. If you're sneaking in around, you know, like I said, after 3 p.m., you're probably able to find a spot, but as it creeps towards 4, it'll be filling up for the football game.
Okay, and you talked about now a number of the Main Street businesses do sort of hand out candy, and I take it to but the bars don't hand out drinks.
No, that would be pretty fun, but that doesn't happen. No, but they are all open. You can, you know, if you're 21, you can go in and out of the bars, have a cocktail, come back out. Take part in the festivities.
Now, you mentioned that you work with the police. Is there a police presence on Main Street, and have we seen rowdy partiers get into some trouble during this event in the past?
You know, usually it's pretty tame. You know, I think some of the, if there is any kind of trouble, it's usually later at night when everyone's spilling out of the bars or something after having a holiday celebration like this. But there will be a police presence. You know, there'll be some police directing traffic. There'll be some police walking around, taking part, giving out candy. Actually, on Fifth Street, they have they'll have their vehicle set up, and they'll be passing out candy bars and all sorts of things.
And Chris, are there any prizes or awards or judging of costumes?
You know, I think the judging of the costumes and the awards is they're
ad hoc.
Yeah, it's sort of ad hoc. Everything is sort of organic. Similar to the dog parade, we used to plan the dog parade. Now it's more of an organic thing that, you know, there's so many dogs on, and then it's sort of word of mouth to go to one area and stage and then walk up your dog. But it's not anything that's organized at this time.
Now, have the municipal employees organized in any way to have any kind of group costumes this year?
You know, we had our MARSEC Halloween costume yesterday. It's been pretty fun. So each department did take the time to have a theme, and that was a lot of fun.
Okay. Chris, what are you wearing today?
You know, we went as the Adams family yesterday, and I'm probably going to be Gomez Adams again today.
When you said we went, other members of your team,
yeah,
other special events people?
Our whole special event team did, yeah. So we had a good time.
Chris, let's see. This is, we're starting to head into the winter season. What's the next big special event you have to deal with? I guess it would be Sundance. Is there anything before that?
You know, we have some smaller community events. We have a lot of Christmas and holiday events. We have Santa Comes Down the Town Lift, which is in December. This is the Vail event. And then we have a menorah parade and lighting as well in December. The HBCA will be having a small business Saturday, which will be coupled with turning on our Christmas lights and a lot of other little holiday activities with that.
All right, Chris, anything else you want to add before you go and put your Gomez on?
Yeah, I would just say that this is a fun event. Traffic can get a little hectic on the way in, but just take your time, come in, have some fun, plan where you're going to park, how you're going to get in and out, and, you know, get out there and see some of the costumes. It'd be fun.
Chris Finney, Park City Special Events Manager. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Funding for the government's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, will end tomorrow, leaving thousands of Utahns without food and other essential items. But as KPCW Sydney Weaver reports, community members in the Wasatch Bank are stepping up.
Luann Hayes Lukenbach is the owner of Luann's Cupcakes, a business she started out of her husband's old garage in Silver Creek. When she heard SNAP benefits may be ending, she rallied her community.
I was feeling really bad about it and frustrated that it was happening. But then I started thinking about what could I possibly do to help. And so I decided, instead of just being mad about it, that I would rally my neighbors and friends and gather some things to see what we could do to help the situation.
Lukenbach took to Facebook calling on those who are able to bring any and all donations to her bakery at 656 Division Street in Silver Creek, or to the mailbox house off Silver Creek Road.
And we even have people that are volunteering to go pick it up if people can't get over to where we are. We'd be happy to go pick it up from them.
She says the bins will stay in place until November 10th, and all donations will be brought to the Christian Center of Park City, a resource center in the Wasatch Back that serves those in need.
Maybe we can't help everyone, but maybe we can help someone. And so if everyone does what they can, the combination is really empowering.
Jessica Bryan is CCPC's Deputy Director of Grants and Marketing. She says the center has a webpage that can help residents start their own food drives. In addition to traditional food items like canned goods and non-perishables, Bryant says the center also accepts hygiene items.
We can use diapers, sizes 2, 4, 5, and 6, personal hygiene items. We also can use adult diapers.
She says the center will also take frozen meats.
We have quite a few freezers in our back room, and we've even had people who are like hunters bring us the meat that they get processed from deer, or people who are ranchers have brought us, you know, like pounds and pounds of individually packaged ground beef.
The Christian Center's food pantries in Heber and Park City are open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Christian Center of Park City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
2 days after delaying a decision on new boundaries, the Wasatch County School District Board of Education got out its pencils to redraw the lines. KPCW's Christine Weller reports board priorities were split, but a date is now set for a vote.
Deer Creek High School is set to open in fall 2026, and for it to have high school sports, the Utah High Schools Association must know how many students will attend by mid-December. The board went back to the drawing board Thursday morning during a special session, interrupting their daily lives to make the timing work. They discussed the public's biggest complaint. The proposed boundary split Daniels Canyon and J.R. Smith Elementary students between the middle schools. Board member Breanne Diedrichson was steadfast about using boundary option B, which kept the schools together.
That is hard on middle schoolers to be the only two out of your close friend group to have to go by yourself to a whole new population. I've heard people say, keep them together, either school.
However, Board President Kim Dickerson, Vice President Corey Holmes, and member Jake Collette were in favor of option H. Similar to the board's preferred boundary, option D, it would use Highway 40 as a natural boundary. Students who live east of Highway 40 would attend Timpanogos Middle School and Wasatch High. Students to the west would go to Rocky Mountain Middle School and Deer Creek High. But instead of heading east at Heritage Farms Parkway, the boundary would be bumped up to the Cove neighborhood near J.R. Smith. Dickerson said this would satisfy many families in the area as their kids would attend the same middle school. The option also balances the number of students at the middle and high schools. With the majority of its members on the same page, the board set a date to approve new boundaries. Wednesday, November 5th at 6:30 p.m. Christine Weller, KPCW News.